This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The run-up to elections has been marred by concerns about political violence. A number of opposition party members were beaten by suspected supporters of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party.
That's reporter Lamek Masina on concerns about violence in Malawi's upcoming elections. Details coming up also. Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi have been affected by a devastating cyclone that has caused the deaths of hundreds and the displacements of thousands of people. The United Nations will hold a long-delayed conference in Libya next month. And Algeria's deputy prime minister has promised what he called open and transparent steps to resolve the country's leadership crisis. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Mozambique's port city of Beira is reeling from the damage inflicted by Cyclone Idai. So far, 200 people have been confirmed dead in the southern African country, but the death toll could be much higher. Neighboring Zimbabwe and Malawi have also been affected by the massive storm, which has caused the deaths of hundreds of people and displaced hundreds of thousands. To brief us on the matter, we have in studio Amancio Miguel from VOA's Portuguese service. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you very much.
Amancio, what is the latest info on the damage the cyclone has caused to Beira as well as the region?
At this time, in terms of numbers of those who passed away due to the cyclone, the government is talking about more than 200 people have died in the region, in central Mozambique. But rescue teams are still looking for more stranded people and more corpses, so the number will likely be much higher. And actually, the president of Mozambique said this week that at least 1,000 people might die or are presumed dead as a result of the cyclone in the Beira city in Mozambique, which is the second major city in the country. And also, Mozambique is now observing 3 days of mourning and a situation of emergency. The government yesterday declared the state of emergency to respond to this situation. While rescue teams are looking for more people, there's some information that the weather is going to improve in the next 2 to 3 days, but the biggest issue is to find more people and provide them with support to find their way in the middle of this all of this trouble. And there's also concerns in the village of Buzi, which is along the Indian Ocean, where at least 200 people are stranded, and it's difficult to reach them to bring to the inland for safety.
So Beira's geography, with parts of it lying below sea level, has always made it vulnerable to effects of extreme weather like Cyclone Idai. So are we surprised by the devastation that happened there?
It was very strong. This time it was very surprising for people. There's been like warnings inviting people to leave the area, but people fear looting. You leave your house and then somebody will come and take your goods. But some people, they moved, but even though did not reduce the impact of this. It's a city of 500,000. It's a big city, 500,000 people.
It's a port city.
It's a port city. And this is also going to have impact in the economics of the region. This is a port that serves Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Zambia. For at least a week, they will not be working, and they're going to impact the region as such.
But the UN has said that Cyclone Idai triggered a massive disaster in southern Africa as a whole, affecting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. What is the UN doing to help with the recovery efforts?
Ever since it the strike. The UN and other organizations, they've been there in Beira, but with a lot of difficulties to intervene. There's no electricity. Banking system is not working. And there's also fear that there's some like electric cable which are destroyed, and it's been very difficult for them to intervene. But so far, UNICEF, for example, they've been there providing what they can, and they also fear that at least over 200 children in Buzi and some other areas of Beira are in danger.
As the full picture of the crisis slowly becomes clear, there are questions about whether the government of Mozambique could have done more to prepare for the disaster. The floods of the year 2000, I'm sure you remember, claimed hundreds of lives, and yet some here feel lessons have not been learned.
Yeah, it seems like everyone is saying the same thing. Civil society is saying that the level of preparedness was not at very good, and there's also been some criticism on the president who went on to visit Swaziland when the issue was happening, and then he had to come back to the country. And also, they say since Beira is like the stronghold of the opposition, RENAMO, the response was not speed enough to support these people. But it seems like situation is changing. Yes. Actually, the Council of Ministers is meeting every day in Beira to speed the response. And another issue that people are very critical of is like, they say there have been a lot of support from the Western country, but they say where is China, who has been always there in terms of resource, but not in terms of support. So these are some of the issues that people are raising, specifically the civil society.
Amancio Miguel, thank you for your input. The United Nations will hold a long-delayed conference in Libya next month. The UN diplomat for Libya, Ghassan Salami, told reporters today that the conference would take place April 14th to the 16th. The goal is to set dates for parliamentary and presidential elections. Salami proposed the national conference last November. He said the gathering will bring together competing officials from the eastern and western parts of the country and will not include any foreign parties. At an earlier attempt at a vote on December 10th could not be carried out. Libya has an official government based in Tripoli, but another government that is based in the eastern part of the country is allied to Khalifa Haftar, a powerful military commander. Malawi's Electoral Commission has officially launched campaigning for many elections with calls against rising political violence. The victims are mostly opposition party members, beaten by suspected supporters of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party. Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
Malawi this week officially opened a two-month campaign period for May elections. Campaigning will run until May 19. Just 2 days before Malawians cast their votes for lawmakers in the National Assembly and for the president. Voters will also cast ballots for local government representatives or councillors. The run-up to elections has been marred by concerns about political violence. A number of opposition party members were beaten by suspected supporters of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, DPP officials, deny the allegation, but tensions were on display Tuesday at the ceremony marking the launch of the campaigning. The ceremony was disrupted for nearly half an hour when the supporters of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party and the ruling DPP shouted insults at each other. Malawi Electoral Commission Chairperson Jenny Ansa issued warnings to the parties.
Out.
ANSA said political violence has been soiling Malawi's electoral process ahead of the May elections. Authorities have warned they will disqualify presidential candidates whose supporters engage in violence during the campaign period. Malawi's Electoral Commission has forced presidential candidates to sign a code of conduct during campaigns. Political parties have pledged their commitment towards peaceful campaigns. Patricia Kaliat is the Secretary General of the opposition United Transformation Movement Party.
We are going to go by what the code of conduct is all about and what agreement we've done with MEC. And we promise that as UTM, the one bringing new politics, the ones who are making sure that we've got to respect the law, the rule of law, we are going also to respect the rights of association.
ANSA said the commission will be monitoring campaign activities to ensure political parties have complied.
The commission strongly warned pro-supporters never to engage in any acts or behavior that is likely to cause incitement to public disorder, rebellion, hate or violence. This is not intended with peaceful conduct of campaign process.
The MEC says about 7 million of Malawi's 17 million people have registered to vote. The United Nations says if not addressed, Malawi's rising political violence could discourage people from voting. Maria Jose Torres is the country coordinator for the United Nations Development Program.
We are expecting political parties really to take seriously the rules of the game, meaning the frameworks that MEC have put together with our code of conduct and the political party laws. And the conduct of the campaign is going to be a fantastic prelude to a peaceful voting on the 21st of May.
Ending government corruption is expected to dominate Malawi's election. Former Malawian President Joyce Banda earlier this month withdrew from the election to support the main opposition candidate, Lazarus Chakwera. Banda became the country's first female president in 2012 after then-president Bingwa Mutharika died of a cardiac arrest. But her term was marred with a corruption scandal known as Cashgate, in which $32 million was siphoned out of government coffers. Banda lost the 2014 election to the late president's brother, current president Peter Mutharika. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
Eighteen past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Aviation investigators continue to study data recorded from the Ethiopian Airlines flight that crashed soon after leaving Addis Ababa on March 10th. Officials are trying to discover the reason for the crash of the Boeing 737 MAX 8 aircraft, which killed 157 people. They are looking at automatic flight control software meant to keep the plane from stalling. Investigators are studying a similar crash of the same aircraft in Indonesia in October. Reuters reports that investigators of the crash say the pilots struggled to understand why the plane's nose was pointing downward. Boeing has said there is a documented procedure to deal with such a situation. Boeing has promised update automatic flight software for the plane. All 737 MAX 8 aircrafts have been grounded, and Boeing has halted deliveries of new aircraft while the investigation goes on. Police in Cameroon have arrested four wildlife traffickers caught with huge quantities of elephant tusks and scales from pangolins. The traffickers said to be operating across Africa were planning to transport the scales and ivory to Asian countries through Nigeria. Mokiedwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Francis Duranna, the highest wildlife official in Cameroon's coastal city of Douala, says the traffickers were arrested following a tip-off from residents.
La délégation régionale de forêt la faune du littoral appuyée par l'AGA et par
He says the police, supported by Cameroon's Ministry of Forestry and Wildlife and conservation groups, including the last great ape, Laga, seized scales harvested from at least 3,000 pangolins and 300 elephant tusks plucked from 150 elephants that were illegally killed. He says it is an enormous loss to biodiversity, nature, and the economy. He says he is calling on people to adhere to the fight to protect wildlife and forest resources because only traffickers benefit. Police say the men are part of an organized ring operating in parks and protected areas on Cameroon's eastern and southern borders and possibly working with accomplices in the neighboring states. Central and Eastern Africa are hotspots for poaching and trafficking pangolins, an animal also known as the scalar anteater. Boniface Dongmo, a senior wildlife control official at the Ministry of Forestry and Wildlife, says Cameroon has been implementing its anti-poaching and trafficking laws, but says the practices are difficult to stop because of the huge demand for certain animal products in Asia. In Vietnam, pangolin meat and scales can fetch up to $1,000 per kilogram. Eric Kabata, a media official for Laga, says traffickers quite often deliver their illegal catch to Nigeria from where it is shipped to Asia, the biggest source of demand for pangolin scales and ivory. He says corrupt practices from government officials and the police is making it difficult to stop the illegal trade.
These traffickers, very top professionals, they know the mechanisms of corruption extremely well. They are international, they are young, tend to move from where the strong wildlife law enforcement to where wildlife law enforcement is not very strict. Traffickers are given lenient treatment, which is a very wrong signal.
International trade in pangolins was banned in 2016 under the Convention on the International Trade in Endangered Species, CITES. But the trade continues. In 2017, officials in Cameroon seized and burned more than 3 tons of pangolin skins and scales that were destined for Asia. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
At the point where the borders of U.S. states of North Dakota and Minnesota come together is the tiny Canadian town of Emerson, Manitoba. As the United States has tightened some immigration rules over the past few years, hundreds of people have illegally crossed the border there to seek asylum in Canada. In this segment of the series, Taking Flight, VOA senior analyst Jeffrey Young went to this isolated place to see the situation firsthand.
All along the border between the United States and Canada, no walls or barbed wire fences mark where the two nations come together, just a cleared space. Right on the border is Emerson, Manitoba, a town of just over 600 people, but a magnet for those seeking asylum in Canada. Sergeant Corey Myers is with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
During the summer months, our numbers are generally higher. In the dead of winter, the numbers will go down.
Myers says about 1,000 people illegally crossed into Canada at Emerson in 2017, many of them Somalis, coming from the U.S. city of Minneapolis, Minnesota, 640 kilometers to the south. Across Canada last year, more than 18,000 people illegally entered to claim asylum. Those who cross the border to Canada at Emerson officially do so at a major U.S. highway just west of town. But unofficially, some will try to go up the Red River, which runs through the town, or walk along the railroad tracks, both headed to Winnipeg. For a short stretch east of Emerson, the international boundary is a dirt road. The real barrier to reaching Emerson from the U.S. is the weather, especially in winter. U.S. Customs and Border Protection agent Aaron Heitke.
Oftentimes what we've seen in the last few years is they pick the worst possible weather. And when you talk about the worst possible weather in North Dakota, it's 35, 40 below zero. It's a 60 mile an hour wind. And so frostbite, hypothermia is a very significant risk.
Not just in winter. In June 2017, 57-year-old Ghanaian Mavis Ototi died from hypothermia. Her body was found in a field south of the Canadian border. CPP agent Heike says she was brought there by a human trafficker. Sadly, he says, she could have entered Canada legally. On both sides, officers try to make sure people survive if they are found crossing the border illegally.
Once we get them out of the elements, then we will formally arrest them for illegally entering Canada and take them into our custody.
Then they are moved to the province's capital, Winnipeg, to await hearings on their asylum requests. Many of those asylum seekers and others immigrating to Canada are helped in Winnipeg by the Manitoba Interfaith Immigration Council, a nonprofit advocacy group that addresses the legal, housing, and employment needs of asylum seekers. Their welcome place is covered in the next segment of Taking Flight. Jeffrey Young, VOA News, Washington.
The human rights group Amnesty International says 14 civilians were killed during 5 airstrikes in Somalia in the past 2 years, a claim the U.S. military denies. Amnesty made the claim in a report released yesterday. It included the stories of 65 witnesses with pictures and satellite images of Somalia's Lower Shabelle area from October 2017 to December 2018. U.S. Africa Command says no civilians were killed and that Amnesty International is not accurate. Amnesty International's Connor Fortune told VOA that the rights group reported on 5 incidents, although it had presented 13 allegations to the U.S. military since last year. Fortune said all but the 5 were later considered untrustworthy. Defense officials said they have studied 18 allegations of civilian casualties in Somalia from the military and outside groups since 2017. They said none of the strikes in question resulted in civilian casualties. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7. Visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an exclusive interview with the Vice President of Malawi, Saulos Chilema. The Malayan politician and VOA's Shaka Sali discuss democracy and the upcoming elections. An in-depth look at Malawi's future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.